I'm Olivia.
I'm Crystal.
And I'm Lola. We're your hosts for this episode of Women's Rights. This season, we are exploring the story of women's ordination in conservative Judaism, the United Church of Christ, the Evangelical Lutheran Church of America, the Buddhist Churches of America, and among evangelical Protestants.
To do so, we have interviewed women in each of these traditions, talking about women's ordination, activism, and the experience of being ordained. In this episode, we're going to look at conservative Judaism. We're going to ask Margot Hughes Robinson, a rabbi and executive director of Partners for Progressive Israel, about her experience in conservative Judaism through her journey of becoming a rabbi and the experiences she gained through the process. Before we get into Rabbi Margot's experiences, it is important to explain the history of her denomination and the ordination of women within it.
Conservative Judaism emerged in the late 19th century as conservative synagogues grew. Women became important parts of the public community. However, there was still no expectation of equality between men and women. The expectation of equality refers to the belief that regardless of race, gender, socioeconomic status, etc., people should be treated equally and given access to the same resources.
The traditional aspects of conservative Judaism made the path to the women's ordination in the rabbinate a long uphill struggle. It wasn't until the 1970s that women were even allowed to be counted in prayer groups, although not all synagogues enforced this change. And until the 1980s, women could not be equal participants in the services of conservative Judaism. Despite this, women still pursued ordination. For many women, becoming a rabbi was an important way to facilitate and grow their community, and the spiritual leadership was not necessarily all about God. Margot's journey with Judaism started off a little differently from most Jews.
I was baptized a Catholic as a baby. And when I was in fifth or sixth grade, my family actually left the Catholic Church for a number of reasons, but went to an Episcopal church for a number of years, in part because I went on a sleepover to a friend's house. And I was like, everything here, we went to her church that was Episcopalian. I was like, this looks really familiar to what I know, but there's a female priest. And I had never seen this. I was just like, this is amazing. Like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. I was like, Mom, they have a lady priest.
This was the moment in Margot's life when she realized she could pursue spiritual leadership.
So I didn't see it and be like, I immediately want to be a priest. It was more, I was just being what I would now call a nudnik towards my parents about, like, you said we had these feminist values, but then we go to the Catholic Church. it wasn't like, I want to be a priest. Actually, I think looking back, it is interesting. I sometimes wonder if I had been a child who was super curious about religion in a Jewish community, if the response would have been, oh, you should be a rabbi, or if I would have also had to be male.
Margot spent a lot of time moving around as a kid, but spent most of her middle school and high school life in Charlotte, North Carolina. There, she developed an impactful relationship with a senior rabbi of her local Reform community, and as a young teen began exploring Judaism.
She's still there, but she's no longer the senior rabbi. But at the time, Judy Schindler, shout out to Rabbi Schindler, was the senior rabbi of the Reform community where I was studying and was a part of. And she was such a force in the entire city that, like, everyone knew who she was. This is like in the early and mid 2000s. She, like, wasn't just the senior rabbi, but, like, she was a mom, and she did all of these incredible pluralistic initiatives within the Jewish community.
Margot goes on to answer our next question regarding ordained women in her life growing up. Rabbi Schindler was a prominent force in the early years of Margot's journey with Judaism. Rabbi Schindler was a public advocate for many progressive causes.
Also, right, like, advocated on the public school board for kids to get Jewish holidays off. She was super involved in activism around homelessness in the city. She and a progressive Protestant minister rented a bus before gay marriage was legal and brought a bunch of Christian and Jewish gay couples, gay and lesbian couples, and drove to DC where marriage was legal and did all their weddings, got them their certificates, and drove back to North Carolina, like, on a party bus. So she was just like this incredible rock star that when I was able to articulate to my parents, like, this is what I want to be, they like already had a model. It wasn't like, oh, women can be rabbi. Like, it was just so, it was like, oh, like Rabbi Judy, it like totally makes sense why you wouldn't just be her.
By the time Margot was beginning her journey with the rabbinate, other women had been fighting for her right to study and lead for decades.
I felt very cognizant that I've been part of, in some ways, a second or sometimes even third generation of female rabbis in the conservative movement. And so even though it felt like such a gendered patriarchal space, I was intensely aware that like there were more women than men in my class.
Margot talked about the women who worked with her to develop her skills, which led us to ask whether she felt supported as an ordained woman in conservative Judaism.
I was very cognizant in rabbinical school that I had these teachers and mentors who often had been the only woman in the room, or had been the first woman to bring up XYZ conversation. And so they were so supportive. Like, I always did feel like most of my female professors and mentors were like really rooting for me as myself, but also like with that gendered component also of like, of course you could do this, and I like you're going to, and we're going to help you.
Despite the support Margot received from strong women in her life, she still faced harassment due to her gender.
Like, I don't think any of my male colleagues, or certainly not every one of my male colleagues, like was harassed in their pulpit internships. I never had a pulpit-facing internship where I didn't receive some form of sexual harassment. And that really runs the gamut from one or two inappropriate comments to like inappropriate touching and like stalking and creepy phone calls. And I don't think that's true of every like non-man attempting to get ordained, and it's not reflective of the conservative movement. But it was like it was actually a really big part of my experience in seminary.
This was not just limited to sexual harassment. Rabbi Margot told stories of men in authoritative positions expressing misogynistic ideals towards her and other women.
Yeah, they're like, it's some real creepiness, or sometimes just like systemic. We had a prominent academic and rabbi and theologian come present to the entire rabbinical school once on what we thought was going to be about like issues of Jewish law. And instead, he's like, I want to take this time to address a really urgent issue in our community. And it's the fertility of Jewish women, especially non-Orthodox Jewish women. He's like, I love that you all are getting your careers, but you need to have babies early. Like, I have all these couples crying because they waited to have kids and now they're having all these infertility issues and they can't have as many kids as they want or kids at all. And just like, you need to be thinking about. And we were like, all the women in this room are in this room to become your rabbinic colleagues. And you're gonna interrupt your own shiur to tell us that we should all be having bait. Like, what? Like, we're in here for our brain, like our whole selves. Like, it was so reductive and so humiliating. And like, our male colleagues didn't stop it. Our female dean at one point actually had to be like, we're gonna stop. Like, stop it.
Many women have faced challenges related to their gender throughout their ordination process. We asked Margot specifically what challenges she faced. Margot had several stories of inappropriate interactions during her time in seminary and while she was working in the pulpit.
Is like I was like, oh, it's happening again. There's a different shape to it, but like, oh my God, is this just gonna be part of it? Rabina, you look like a sexy baby, I think was my favorite. Like the best and worst case. To have a congregant tell me that during an internship once. It's like, well, there's so much to unpack there. That's so di why would you say this to your spiritual leader?
Despite years of pioneering for women's rights, ordination is a difficult profession, particularly for women. We then asked her about what traits someone needs in order to succeed as an ordained leader.
I think you have to be really tenacious. You have to really want it.
Yeah.
I think talking to a lot of my Christian colleagues, right, they go to seminary and they're like, I went to school for such a long time. I did an undergrad degree and then a master's and a divinity degree. And I was like, I went to school for a decade after high school. Like, this is like going to medical school. This is bonkers, right? I graduated college. I did full-time intensive yeshiva, like traditional Jewish text study in Jerusalem for a year. And then I did 5 additional years of traditional and academic and practical learning. The last or the middle 2 years I was in school, my third and fourth year, I had a 20-hour a week, so fully half-time internship that included nights and weekends on top of 6 courses a semester. So I think tenacious, like you need to have a community and some scaffolding also, because like nobody gets through this entirely alone. a really good sense of humor, an ability to take feedback, also an ability to emotionally separate from feedback.
Rabbi Margot double majored in theater and Jewish studies during her undergraduate education. We asked how her background in theater influences her.
It's funny, when I took a rabbinic communications class, I like really had to suss out what's the difference between giving a monologue and giving a sermon. And it's actually so much more vulnerable, right? To say, I'm not going to embody a character. Like, I actually just have to stand here really vulnerable and like deliver the things that I wrote. It was like stepping into a deeper level of, vulnerability and accountability. Right? Like, I feel like when I was performing, it's like accountability to the world of the show, and like to show up in public as a rabbi is to be like accountable to your community and like to the world.
Another important aspect of women's ordination is opposition to the possibility of a female spiritual leader after rules have changed to permit women's ordination. We asked Rabbi Margot about the opposition she faced while pursuing ordination.
Not within my movement itself. Right? Like every man under a certain age in my field was like taught by women and relies upon the scholarship of women and like knows they can't get away with that at some level. People are more likely to push back actually outside of the Jewish community than they are within it. I feel like especially with the ordination of actually many of my friends through like Maharat, like there, you know, there's female Orthodox rabbis now. And so I think sometimes when I was in Israel and living in Jerusalem for a couple of years, sometimes I would face pushback there of like, oh, that's not a thing. But then the response is just like, it's like been a thing since before your parents were alive. So I'm not like, it's an ontological reality, whether or not you agree with it, fine.
There is an increasing female presence in the field of spiritual leadership. However, most denominations, including conservative Judaism, are rooted in male leadership. We asked Rabbi Margot if she could feel the lingering effects of male dominance in her profession.
Yeah, absolutely. Other women I went to school with, and I often talked about what it means to like love a Torah and love a tradition that doesn't always feel like it loves you back. And a huge amount of that was gender. I think also as a queer woman, it's like additionally complicated. But there were times actually in my ordination process and seminary process actually where it felt harder to be a woman than a queer person, going through the ordination process. But right to read, books, to spend so much time with Talmud and Midrash specifically, and Midrash is what I ended up getting my academic master's in, and like loving these texts and their richness and creativity and their profound humanness, and over in everything from a family law course to, you know, the expanded Midrashic canon of Genesis. These texts that were written exclusively by men that have a lot of not just like cultural values and assumptions, but often like inaccurate physical mappings of women's bodies and the way that they work and the way that they're assumed to function or not function in both a physical and like a religious spiritual context.
For many Jewish women, the traditional view of women was disenchanting.
We read things about women and whether, you know, we're full people or not, or whether we're like children, within Jewish law. And it is so difficult to reconcile that with the reality then also of a mixed gender classroom and a, you know, gender diversity in the hiring process. I think there's also in the conservative movement in particular, right, there are some areas of the country where it's still a pretty new and exciting thing to have, you know, female rabbis be in a senior rabbinic position, particularly not so much in New York City or other major cities, but in, I would say, like smaller towns and mid-sized cities, depending on the region and the U.S., it can be a very new thing. And within the larger, like Masorti global conservative movement, it's definitely still a very new thing as well. It's something I think less, as I've gotten ordained, just because of the working in the nonprofit and justice and organizing space. But in the congregational world and within the world of the seminary I attended, it was very, very prominent all the time.
The path to the rabbinate for women is clearly a challenging one. Keeping this in mind, we asked Rabbi Margot, if you could advise yourself at the beginning of your career, what would you tell yourself?
Buckle up. But actually, like, enjoy it And it doesn't have to be one way, even though it feels like it has to be one way. I think I spent certain long stretches of rabbinical school and still struggle in my career with the idea that I'm supposed to fit into a certain kind of box or exactly match a certain model of what it means to be a rabbi, what it means to be a female rabbi, what it means to be a conservative rabbi, a queer rabbi, insert descriptor or identity here, rabbi. And the times I got the most out of my education and I'm getting the most out of my career is when I said, no, I like have some like deep understanding here, some like svara, to use the Aramaic term here, about like what I need and what I can do and what I want to do. And the places where I let myself be myself and like trusted, not necessarily just my own intuition, but like also trusted my experience. And like trusted my feelings. It's such a cerebral process, so much of the traditional text study, and then the working with people is so emotional. And I think when I stood in those places and let those marinate and integrate, the head and the heart, like that, I wish like I could go hug 23-year-old Margot and be like, that's gonna be the work actually the next 5 years. You're gonna learn like so much Torah. You're gonna, beat your head against the wall until Hebrew language finally makes sense to you. But like so much of it is also like getting right with yourself and learning how to do that consistently so that you can be there for other people.
Margot's journey with the rabbinate provides important insight into the development of women's ordination within conservative Judaism. She presents a complex story with important female role models that helped guide her through the difficult task of becoming an ordained leader, particularly while being a woman. In our next episode, we'll look at women's ordination in the United Church of Christ.
That concludes our podcast for today. Our theme music was Bird Therapist by Craig MacArthur, used by an Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike Creative Commons license. Special thanks to Rabbi Margot Hughes Robinson. Also, thanks to Dan Bennett and Meredith Richter of Smith Learning, Research and Technology Team. And thanks to the Religion Department that supports public-facing student writing at Smith College. Tune in next time on Women's Rights.